So what do you think about when you hear the word content? How about influencer? I know these terms paint a picture. Believe me, the picture's clear in my head right now. But the industry is changing, and these things are becoming the norm in our industry. So today we're tackling the burning question, how can producers like us adapt to the ever-changing needs of our clients? What should we be doing to give the same amount of care and attention to the content aspects of our shoot as you would the 30-second spot? I know it's hard. This is Producers Happy Hour, and on this episode, we unravel the secrets to staying ahead of the curve and thriving in this dynamic environment. We're chatting with Sean Awalo, Head of Broadcast TV Development at Art Class. Stick around till the end and we'll share valuable tips and strategies that will elevate your game as a producer. Grab a drink and roll the intro.
You're listening to Producers Happy Hour. I'm Lawrence Lewis.
And I'm Sister Christian.
And we're here to help you unravel the complexities of film and commercial production.
Whether you're a seasoned producer, a production executive, a bidder, or a key part of the production team, we're here to equip you with the insights that I know Lawrence and I wish we had when we started out.
So you can navigate today's production challenges, conquer those demanding clients, and unlock the magic to seamless production.
All with a cocktail, of course. So grab a drink, say goodbye to the gatekeepers, and let's dive into the art of producing.
Sister Christian, another episode, another excuse to get a hangout with you. How are you?
Doing well. Just fresh off of a job, and it's feeling good. It's feeling like maybe this year is picking up a little bit after last year's strikes.
I hope so. I've been keeping myself busy, but I am hearing from my production managers here in LA that it is maybe still, we're still having a little slowdown. But hey, we've got a great guest to interview. Sean Awalo from Art Class is here with us. Hi, Sean.
Greetings.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Are you enjoying happy hour?
I am. I've converted to the way of non-alcoholic thinking, but
good.
Ooh, nice.
Still a flex. I have a Gravitas from Bravis Brewing, which is a bourbon oak-aged brew, probably the only one in North America, and you can only get it as a drop the day after Thanksgiving if you hop up early on their website and quickly hit order, you're allowed to order a max of three. This is my last one.
Uh-oh.
And then it's wait to next year.
Wow.
I feel honored. And it's non-alcoholic?
Non-alcoholic. Non-alcoholic bourbon aged stout.
Oh, amazing.
Ooh. And it tastes like the real thing, because that's always the thing. I know it's non-alcoholic. What does it taste like? Tastes like the real thing.
You know, I'm just doing a little classic today, a little Tito's and soda. Keep it simple with some lemons from my friend's garden. So how about you, sister?
Well, you know me, I love a seltzer, so I'm having a high noon grapefruit.
Wonderful. All right. There cheers, everyone.
So yes, cheers, everyone. So have you ever listened to one of our episodes but wanted more than what we could fit into a 30-minute show?
Picture this. We dreamed it up, so dream it with me right now. Close your eyes. All the resources and links and info on current industry news, industry happenings, the topics we're talking about in these episodes, plus bonus insights that maybe we didn't even get a chance to mention, all delivered into your inbox for free.
For free. Absolutely free. You don't have to pay for this. That's why we created our episode guide. It gives you more insight into each topic, each interview guest, and each industry happening that you need to stay on top of. It comes out every other Tuesday, the same day our new episode drops.
So to get it, just click the link in our show notes or go to producershappyhour.com/episode guide and we will send you all the goodies. All right, let's dive in. Sean Awalo is the head of broadcast development at an amazing production company called Art Class. Founded in 2018, Art Class specializes in commercials, shorts, branded content for such clients as AT&T, Amazon, ESPN, Kellogg's, State Farm, too many to list.
With more than 20 years of experience in the music, television, and film industries, Awalo joins Art Class in February 2021, where he helps the company's TV network and streaming clients with their many marketing needs, from launch campaigns to branded partnership projects. They do it all.
Welcome to the show, Sean.
Well, thank you for having me.
I want to set the stage and I want to know a little bit more about this TV network that's at Art Class or you're putting together. What exactly is it that you're working on over there?
Art Class has been around and really just kicking ass in the commercial side of the world, that traditional agency model with, you know, reps in regions. And when I was brought on board, I was coming from working at companies like Big Machine, where I was at for a majority of my career at that point. And then Roger, where I was able to meet Christian, as a matter of fact, on a couple of projects. In both those instances, those companies dealt primarily on the broadcast side of things. So dealing with networks, dealing with Netflix and Disney as clients. And it's a little bit of a different world. Because even when you're doing a promo spot or an integrated brand spot, there's usually not the agency component. It's a little, it's right. In essence, basically direct to client.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting because I came on board to help build that part of the business out for Art Class while also being an extra piece of bandwidth for the traditional agency side as well.
Got it. And so a lot of promos or, you know, what kind of work are you doing for the streamers out there?
For the streamers, it's probably light on the promo side. I wish it was a little more, but it's not, and certainly not last year with the strike. You know, as a matter of fact, we kicked the year off doing a huge promo campaign for NBC Universal for a show, Mrs. Davis, even had an AI component that we did for online.
I fucking love that show.
And yeah, it was a great show, right? It was awesome.
Show. Yeah.
Like many of us, I thought, okay, this is a great way to kick off in January. It's going to be awesome. And then, you know, a couple of months later, strike and there's no promo work. So that being said, then the only game in town is, you know, from the broadcast side really was integrated work. And even that became interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Because some of that work involves talent. And so for a little while into the year, that was fine. And then the actors' strike happens. Yeah. Now there's no talent to help, you know, marry the integrated work that the networks have. So then there's no work. On a regular day, in a non-strike year, I'm probably still doing more integrated brand work, which honestly, and sometimes it's the same product. Like, so it'll be a State Farm, but it'll be a State Farm with ESPN and their sports center talent, as opposed to a regular agency State Farm job that we would do, which is with, you know, Jake with State Farm and Patrick Mahomes.
Well, so what I think is fascinating these days, and I've seen my, especially in the last 5 years or so, going from, you know, you're just doing one commercial with this amount of money to you need everything on that commercial. You need to have a social media shooter. You need to have a behind the scenes person doing stuff. Not only are you supporting the main brand marketing campaign that you're doing, you are back here filming all the things that need to push the marketing campaign too. So not only are we rolling out a regular old commercial, we're rolling out the hype for the commercial and all the things around the commercial and how it was made. And it's a campaign. It's not just a commercial.
Second screen stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You no longer have 2 30s and a 15 and a couple of lifts. You have 400 deliverables that need to go 6 second lead-ins for YouTube and and TikTok. And yeah, you have to think about everything.
And not always reflected in the budget.
Yeah.
We have to pay for that too? Can't you just cut it from the shit you're getting?
Right.
Well, this is something that I've not quite seen yet, but I'm ready to see if this is the future. So do you feel treatments are going to start to reflect how this particular job that we're doing, this, you know, commercial, straightforward commercial, is there going to be a page added now? Like, how can we also support this social media wise? What else can we do to fill out the rest of the campaign?
I think they already do. To the agency's credit, they've kind of caught up. And so it is an active dialogue now where it's not sort of like, this is an afterthought. It's like, okay, here's the brief and it's in the brief and you know where you stand. There's going to be a 30, there's going to be 2 15s. There's going to be, you know, here's the digital component. So a lot of times I'm going in sort of knowing probably 75% of the time I know what we're up against. And so then we just, you know, put it in the treatment accordingly.
Yeah, no, but it's true, because if you don't have the expectations laid out, how can you appropriately meet them if it's underfunded?
Right. The 30-second broadcast TV commercial that this industry is founded on is honestly the grandfather of it all, right? Like, it's on its way out, the dinosaur of it all. So, and like you said, second screen earlier, but second screen's really turning into first screen now, right? How do you see this, the industry shifting in that direction?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I remember when the iPhone came out. You know, I remember when cell phones, I was in the music industry in New York when cell phones first became a thing that executives had. And so we have a group of executives just filtering into the industries who for the most of their life have grown up with a smartphone. If you're talking to an agency executive or a media executive that's, you know, 25, 26, 27, 28, that's the reality. And so conversely with that, that individual also has spent their formative years, high school, senior, through college years, with TikTok, with this format of delivery that is not only content, but often a way to communicate that is all about short form, quick communication. And for those of us that are older, you have to recognize that because when I talk about that's a form of communication, that's how they communicate. That's what their mindset is when you're talking to them and presenting to them in a bid, in a boardroom. And you can see it, that part of their language. And I guess to some degree, part of my language too. But let's be honest, for me, it's more learned.
Yeah.
So Lawrence, I think that's a big change. I think that's a big paradigm shift, like, and it affects everything. It affects the content that you're thinking about because you know that that's what their headspace is, and it affects even how you have to communicate with them.
Affecting that, now I've been around long enough as well to have seen when BTS or social media asks were starting to get added, and directors would lose their fucking minds. They'd be like, "That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to do this big thing over here. Just hire somebody for that." But in turn, now it seems like there is this desire for the director to say, no, I'd like for the entire creative to be, for me to be a part of the entire creative. So I'm happy to have a hand in the other stuff as well. Are you seeing it gravitate towards that?
And it's interesting because I think when I came over to art class, they had this really prolific director's roster, I think like 20 directors. A lot of them really sort of that sought after, that nice scenario where the phone is ringing for them and it's less about bidding and more scheduling. And so my thought was, are these guys even going to be interested in doing some of my broadcast work? And, you know, directors want to direct. They always want to tell a story. They always want opportunities. What the nice, pleasant part of the broadcast side of it is a lot of times the idea is not completely baked, you know, and I'm sure, Christian, you can attest to that. So the directors love that. Because they're so used to the agency side where the boards are here are the boards, and sometimes the script is even already fully written. And so it's about you bringing your execution game to it and your vision for execution. And while that exists in every format, the nice thing about broadcast is that they have the ability to sometimes help shape the script, shape the concept. And you know, Nickelodeon might sort of have an idea, but they don't have a full idea. And they all love that. And I think that's the same with the other elements, right? Is that they're creative, they're artists at heart. And so any way that they can express that art is a win for them. So like, it's all part of that main creative. So I would love to be a part of it. I almost think they hate it when they're not.
Yeah.
Ah, that's so refreshing because I can tell you that that's not always been the case.
Yeah, no, you're right. It hasn't. You're right. There was that like, oh, you're trying to get extra from me? No. But like, I think as time has gone on, it's become more than normal. And I suspect that part of what that is, you know, directors talking amongst their community.
Realizing
like, hey, some people in our community are digging it. So I maybe need to reevaluate.
To that kind of point, you know, we typically rely on agencies for strategy, and obviously they're the ones looking at the data. And when it comes to social media and all that, the data is so important and easy to attain. Is there any sort of thinking from the art class side or the production side or the director's side about a little social media strategy, about how to take whatever the main story is, the main messaging we're trying to sell, and how to creatively get those into a TikTokable message in a new creative way. Because when you look at TikTok, there are 12-year-olds who understand the strategy behind those social media platforms and can all of a sudden, over a month, you know, get, you know, 500,000 new followers. Is any of that thinking starting to come from the production side? Or are we still kind of relying on that from the old agency model?
We are still relying on that from the old agency model. That's my overall answer. From an art class perspective, I don't feel that that's 100% the case. And this is coming from one of the founders of art class, Vincent Pione, created 73 questions with Vogue, right? And we get asked to recreate that all the time. We used to see all these research people say, you know what would be nice? We have this brand. Is there something we could do this 73? Because that was this, you know, here are your 3 minutes of content with a celebrity you know answering 73 questions. And I think that organically there have been these times at art class where it certainly wasn't designed, but we fell into developing that type of content. During the pandemic, Ryan Reynolds, who is friends with a couple of the art class founders, had an idea to sort of do something where he was teaching himself different things. It was, you know, Ryan doesn't know, and enlisted art class on the production side for that. And that, you know, ended up taking off. I believe it was on Snapchat and you know, went viral. And so there are these things that we've kind of fallen into that have gone viral. And so I don't want to claim that we're experts in that, but we've seen it up front enough and been a part of it to be able to be a part of the conversation. Yeah. But I still think that conversation has to be led by agencies, not so much because agencies are in the know, but because it takes the agency maybe hiring an outside company or outside forces that do know, right? Like at some point, someone should hire that 12-year-old. If that 12-year-old knows how to get you 500,000 new viewers, hire the 12-year-old. Let's be smart about this. I don't need to be the be-all, end-all, and the wheel that moves everything. I certainly cannot sit here and tell you I know how to instantly get you 500,000 viewers.
Yeah, exactly.
No. It's back when they used to, remember when it was 2008, when it was like, we need this to go viral. Do you guys know? Like, there's a viral thing, and we need it to go viral. So if we could just make it go viral, and you're like, it's not
full. It's not
formula.
A button. Right. Oh, pay me $50,000 more, and I have the viral buttons right here. I'm just not pressing it because you're not paying me. So yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, and we've now realized that it's all based on people.
Right. Based on people, based on algorithms. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we know that now.
Have you ever wanted to take your commercial film production skills to the next level?
Oh, I always do. Based on that, we've got something special for you. We want you to join us for our very first in-person Producers Bootcamp.
That's right. It's super exciting. You're hearing it here first.
Yeah.
On Sunday, April 28th, 2024, coming up very soon in Santa Monica, California, we, Lawrence and I, are hosting a half-day immersive deep dive into the art of commercial film production.
I mean, talk about community and mentorship, right? We've finally got someone kicked us in the ass. His name's Jordan Brady. And he's like, just fucking do it. So we're doing it. We're going to be in person, and we're going to import all of our knowledge into your brains. Limited spots are available just to make sure that everyone gets personalized attention. It's going to be a very small group. So grab your seat now.
And we're so fortunate to be presenting alongside Jordan Brady's commercial directing bootcamp. This workshop is your ticket to mastering the intricacies of producing stellar content at top tier levels.
That's right. Elevate your filmmaking skills with insights covering everything from deconstructing director's treatments to negotiating agency and client relationships, all from the producer's point of view.
This course runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., four solid hours, and is only $4.95. Hell, that's a bargain. Plus, it's the day after Jordan Brady's Director's Bootcamp, so you can make it a weekend of learning and growth.
And as a special bonus, we're offering a $100 discount to everyone who is participating in Jordan Brady's commercial directing bootcamp.
Head over to producershappyhour.com/bootcamp to secure your spot today.
Now, sometimes we, you know, when the freelance community over here, producers and whatnot, hear the term content, sometimes it can be thought to be a little low budget or scrappy or less important than a Super Bowl spot. Big misconception of the importance of what we're producing is shifted by the label it's given. Whereas the reality is, everything's moving towards content. Everything's moving towards storytelling. If kids on TikTok can give a bigger ROI to a brand by mentioning their product than a 30-second broadcast commercial is in, then we're seeing where the importance actually is. So what do you think producers need to do, or production community needs to do or understand to kind of make it through this shift from our traditional broadcast commercial to content?
It's going to happen with or without you.
Exactly.
So this is going to open a whole can of worms. So I'm going to touch on the philosophy of it, and then we're going to leave it alone because it's a whole other episode. But it's the same argument everyone's having with AI right now.
The
genie's out the bottle. It's coming. Like, there's no, like, you know, let me try to figure it out. Like, you better jump on board real quick and figure it out real quick and decipher it, because it's coming whether you want it or not. So I think it's the same thing with content, and it's been that way for a while. However, the other side of that coin, and I this is what I found last year, especially during the strikes, is that I don't think that there is really a shift from commercial to content. I just think that there are more avenues now and more outlets that demand something longer than a 30-second spot, right? That demand...
Right.
And by the way, we do that all the time. I mean, we shot a TV show that was completely branded, almost in the old school sense, how you used to have like Lucio Ball's like one sponsored, like it was very much sort of like, it was very much sort of like that. Those opportunities are there, but commercials are still around. And if, as a matter of fact, during the strike, like we were actually really busy last year, and the shift was that we just didn't have any content opportunities, but we still had plenty of opportunities that were just traditional agency. In some cases, traditional agency, and you have really good production talent that was willing to work because there's a strike. So, so that's really when it was weird, because people were like, you know, on the content side, everyone was like, oh, it was doom and gloom, and it was, and it was bad, and they knew eventually it would catch up to the other side of the business too, probably, but it never did. And so, like last year, I felt guilty at times because I was like, well, on the commercial side, I'm actually like, I got 3 shoots next week. And so, yeah, that just got me thinking that like, yeah, I don't know if it's an either or. It didn't really feel like an either or. It just felt like a seesaw, and all of a sudden content wasn't there and commercial was there. But, you know, as we get back to normal, it's just playing in both sandboxes. And I think they're both fun. I think that from our standpoint as producers, right, the person that wants to work on like a 10-day content shoot is the same person that wants to work on a 60-day movie or a television series. That's a different person, usually, at least for me, than the person that wants to hop in and be doing art on a shoot for a week and then be on to the next, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because I was just having this conversation with someone on set, and really, really talented art department person, and that's what they were saying. They were like, oh man, I'm up for this movie, but like 30 days with this director, I'm over it. I don't want to do it. Sean, if I can just continue doing art class stuff where it's like, you know, it's like you have me in and out in like, you know, 10 days, and it's always fun. And I was like, yeah, it's interesting. I could see that appeal.
Yeah, the short form content world is built around that. You know, like a lot of us who would prefer short form over long form, because you get to pick and choose who you work with, but then the jobs are over pretty quickly, and then you get on to the day. They're exciting because you're not day in and day out the same thing over and over. So
my long-winded way of just saying that I think one of the differences is the team you're putting together when you're doing content is sometimes different. Can be a little bit different.
I think IP is a very exciting direction, that way content is going. What can we expect as a shift in this? Because I do, again, see the traditional commercial route just dying soon.
When you talk about IP, you know, you're talking about intellectual properties. I'm excited about that, but there's a lot of problems there. And so really what it comes down to is, you know, it's the word, right? It's intellectual property. Someone has ownership over that. And right now the problem is figuring out who has that ownership. And a lot of times, who should have that ownership is actually the artist. But that's not always the case. And so to me, when you start talking about brands creating IPs, once again, nothing new. The business already exists. It's already out there. You know, one of the things that I dealt with, which was, you know, it was crazy, to be honest, is, you know, I have a partnership with my cousin who's a pretty prolific comic book writer. And so there was a project we were working on as a TV show based on a character that he created for DC Comics called Naomi, and became a TV show that Ava DuVernay was producing. Mm. And there was a battle around the IP, because it's like, well, David as a writer for DC, like Marvel writers, is a work for hire. Yet and still, he created that character, right? It's the same argument Marvel had with Jim Starlin and Thanos. And Thanos was part of the cornerstone of $1 billion worth of films. But it's like, you got to pay the artist. You got to pay the writer that created that. That's his IP. I'll be honest with you. It's pretty rude and shocking. Some of these big media companies are literally sending out like, created is not quite the word. And I said, well, what is the word? You know, if David Walker and Brian Bendis sat in a room and said, you know, what we're going to do is create this black girl superhero to highlight like black girl magic. That wasn't any corporate lawyers in Warner Brothers thinking, you know, this is what we're going to do. It was two guys. It was two creative writers sitting down at the kitchen table before they started doing, you know, the comic book that they were hired to do. So, you know, I just think that that's a question we have to ask all over the place, because the same mistake will be made on the agency side. The same mistake will be made by just your mom and pop brands out there that want to develop IP and own IP. And my question is like, just do it naturally, right? Like just the other day I was thinking about Jake from State Farm. And I was like, it's crazy how certain brands will fall into, you know, and I'm like, is it by design? Is it just lightning in a bottle? That, you know, I think with Jake from State Farm, it was more lightning in the bottle, because I know from having done stuff with him, he'd never thought it was going to be this long career that would make him a millionaire, you know? I booked the gig. Oh, great. Now, you know, but I also think that now they're more conscious of it because of IP. Yes. And I think that's great. Like to me right now, the one I'm really vibing on are the Wendy's spots with the staff, and there's the guy who's like, you know, talking about bad boys, what you gonna do when we bring your food? That guy cracks me up. Every time I watch that spot, I just start laughing, because it's just his demeanor. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Wendy's got one. Yeah, they could almost build a sitcom with these three guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they got one right here.
As they could. Like, then they put on their YouTube channel and on their website, then they have episodes and people go and watch for 3 minutes.
100%, Christian.
100%.
Yeah. So cool. I think that's where it works. It's like just go about your business and then...
Opportunity
will happen, and then drive down and drill down into it.
Well, to a certain extent, some of this was knowing that I did music videos in the New York City, you know, like hip hop heydays between, you know, 98 and 2005. The labels owned all that shit. The artist was the one paying for that $1 million music video out of their profits versus not. And it's very much feeling grosser than that now.
Yeah, I think music figured it out, right? I think the artist did figure out where the power lay, and they started saying, and it was great because they started saying no to those music videos and doing cheaper ones. Liar. And there's a guy right now, you should check out Tizo Touchdown, and he is like, his music is so dope, but he did a ton of music videos just like in rural Texas where he lived, and they're not great videos production wise. But the music is great, and he's great as a personality. And I was like, "Yeah, that's all you
it's
need."
Like TikTok.
You know, and now he's got a now he's got a big record deal, and he can do a little bit of a cooler video. But like, I love that he built a career doing these small videos that seemed like he just shot him himself with a friend.
I do think that power does lie with the artist and the individual, and I do like, as a producer, the urge to protect the smaller person or the individual is there. For 100%. I'm glad that people are starting to be hip to that.
I want to ask about, I don't know how involved art class has been with any of this, but influencers and user-generated content. Have you seen that play a bigger role in, you know, the level of commercials and content you guys are creating?
Certainly, it plays a big role. There's no doubt about it. For us, those instances have been strictly on a project by project basis. You know, like we did a spot with Addison Rae, you know, so then we're touching an influencer, and obviously the agency brought us in to execute, and Addison Rae is there to boost whatever that brand is. My probably first year at art class, I had a friend that was working at FaZe Clan at the time. And and so we shot a web series with Little Yachty and FaZe Clan. It was an eye opener for me, even as a gamer. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe the numbers these kids are putting up. You know, I've been as much a spectator as anyone in that we're not really driving that conversation, but we love working with influencers and I recognize their value. And I'm still wrapping my mind around the control and the paradigm shift that an influencer has.
It's direct to consumer, basically. Like with TikTok, it's insane that who you can reach. You just reach around everybody and you get to the people that you want.
Yeah. So I want to know what you see coming in the future for us. I mean, all of our audience is basically producers and production people and freelancers, and the industry is constantly shifting. And I know it makes some people a little nervous and afraid, especially with AI and everything turning into content, which, you know, as we've learned from this discussion, it's still an important and valid thing that we're producing. What do you see coming down the road? What should we be looking out for as we navigate these waters of live action production?
I think content's king, right? And so I think that that's not going anywhere. And you probably see more brands figuring out IP and figuring out how to live in longer formats. And then, like I said, it's probably such a longer conversation, but on the AI side, you know, it's coming and we all need to figure out how to work with it. And you are starting to see pieces of that too, right? You're starting to see the, you know, development of treatments can sometimes be a little bit easier. I mean, I was with the director and we did a traditional treatment because I still believe you have to do that. But we were on the Zoom talking to the client and he was asking like questions to them and then typing it into his generator and then showing them like, yeah, so we could shoot it. It could sort of be like this. And it wasn't perfect. It wasn't anything that you would put into a treatment. But for a Zoom call, just to illustrate something, it was a heck of a lot better than the old school way, which would be a director with a chalkboard or a pen. Well, if we shot it this way from this angle, it would look like, and I was like, yeah, there we are.
It's amazing. Holy shit. I mean, like, no, I get it because, you know, I can picture an apple and you can picture an apple and they could be two vastly different apples. Do you know what I mean? Yours could be animated. Mine could be real. Mine could be green. I know, but like to actually give them a visualization of your thoughts in real time is kind of insane.
That's where we're at. And even beyond that, you know, when you start going into Unreal Engine and those kind of things where you can literally be building worlds in real time and putting in a camera and changing the lens and looking at angles. I mean,
I'll leave you guys with this last thing. So one of our directors, Paul Trillo, he's one of the real preeminent people in AI right now. And he works, you know, with the sources. So he is one of 20 people right now with a Sora license globally outside of the company as of the beginning of this week. So right. I am really stoked. And he's a director, so he knows the challenges. He's not like, he wants to continue to direct. So he's not like, I'm trying to make my own replacement. That's what I love about Paul. It's like, we you know, everyone trusts him. I think that's what a lot of people globally react to is they know Paul is an artist, and he's a director, and he wants to use this to enhance that, not to replace that. It'll be interesting. Maybe if I'm on again in the future, we'll be able to talk about what that ended up being. But yeah, Sora is going to be a game changer.
It's fascinating, and it looks very interesting. And a lot of people in our positions are on all the boards are nervous that it's going to replace us. As much as that is a tool that can be used, if humans aren't going to connect with it when they're watching it, it's not going to replace us.
It's not going to work.
It's not. It can generate a bunch of real cool locations, but like, you have to then take talent and you're going to want to put them in the virtual world. I mean, that doesn't completely always work, just like the Mandalorian stage doesn't always work. So, and then there's just no replacing a human emotion.
Human.
We haven't figured it out. We've seen really cool CGI that looks really realistic and it's still not Leonardo DiCaprio acting in the, what you're going to get out of him in Killers of the Flower Moon or, you know, the looks on Robert Downey Jr.'s face in Oppenheimer in the end when he knows he's been duped. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, you're not getting that. The Sora can only do so much, you know? like the yep. the look where you all get like, oh, he knows he's cooked, you know? So yeah, that emotion is exclusively human, everybody.
Yeah.
For now.
Sean, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, this was a wonderful conversation. Yes, we will. We'd love to have you back once there's more to talk about in terms of Sora and AI.
It could be fun. We could even bring Paul Trillo on and
yeah.
figure out what we're doing. But
maybe it'd be nice to have him on to, you know, like tamp down some of the fears out
yes.
there, because the fear is real. I'm seeing all kinds of posts
that
are like,
very afraid.
It's going to replace us. It's like, it's not replacing us tomorrow. So let's just take a deep breath and, you know, go forward with ethics and common sense and figure it out.
Yeah. Sean, thank you so much. If people want to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Awalo at artclasscontent.com is the best way.
Great. Sister Christian?
SisterChristianProduces.com. I'm there 24 hours. Lawrence, if people want you, how do they get you?
24 hours a day. LawrenceTLewis.com. See you next time.
Thanks for joining Producers Happy Hour.
If you got value from this episode, please don't keep it to yourself. Spread the love by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
And let's be honest, we wouldn't have the show without you. Your feedback helps us to keep making this amazing content.
This show is brought to you by our editor, Bren Russell at podlad.com.
And Christopher Daniels, who is our branding expert and one fabulous treatment designer.
So until next time, always remember,
making shit is hard.